right, it is 7 o'clock on the nose, and I'm going to stop my video so that my audio definitely works. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ, and I'm an alcoholic. By way of housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You will be able to send chat messages to the meeting hosts only. And Ask It Basket questions should go to the user questions or Larry. And we'll go over that a little bit more detail here in a second. I have posted a PayPal link in the chat pod. Donations go to our home group and we disperse those to the various service structures. And for those who care to join us, I'm going to open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you. And you can either wave at the screen or raise your blue hand virtually. I see Andrea. Let me go ahead and unmute you so that you can introduce yourself.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Super glad you're here.
Anybody Thank you so
else?
Much.
Yeah. Anybody else in their first 30 days? All right, great. And if you would like your number passed along to the newcomer, please feel free to send your phone number to the hosts or questions through chat, and we will pass it on. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. So tonight, we are super excited to welcome Kelly to tell her story. And after she tells her story, we'll give her a short break and take some announcements, et cetera. And then we will spend the remaining half hour to ask questions of her. So please, and we're encouraging you to send your questions to the user questions through chat so that we can ask those to Kelly here in a little bit. And tonight, I have the pleasure of introducing Kelly B. from St. Petersburg, Florida. I've known her for about 20 minutes, but she seems absolutely delightful. And I'm super excited to hear your experience, strength, and hope. So I will not take another minute of your time. I give you Kelly. And Kelly, you're still muted, unfortunately.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to start all over. No. Anyway, I'm so pleased to be here tonight, and I'll tell you what, I am so pleased to see some friends of mine here and some, and oh, Amy, it's so wonderful to run into you again. I'm just so excited about being here. I turned my last natal birthday, 6/23/1942. I turned 78 years old, and I sobered up on 11/22/1982. That makes me 37 years sober, and I'm so pleased to say that I am an alcoholic, and I'm convinced to my innermost self that I know I'm an alcoholic. I have a disease that the keys of my disease are locked on the inside of me. And here's the thing, no matter what anybody could do, they could not get through to that, to me. I have to take that key that's inside of me, and I have to open it up and allow you to come in. But I was so shut down all my life, completely shut down from everything. And the only time that I ever felt like that life was happening was whenever I was in a dark bar, sitting at the bar with mirrors behind the mirror of the bar, just sitting there staring at myself. And I loved it. I could have sat on that bar stool forever. I was so happy in bars. I loved to drink in bars. I absolutely loved it. And now I drank in Southern California and all over Los Angeles area and the San Fernando Valley. And what would happen with me, I'm a runner. So the minute things started getting bad or I got fired from another job, I would run, find another bar to drink in. And the main thing that I would do whenever I'd go in that new bar, okay, because we are in LA, you know, near Hollywood, that I would dress up. And I'll tell you how I dressed up, okay? I wanted to dress up like a movie star. And I had this big blonde wig, and I would put that on my head, and I would pretend that I was Marilyn Monroe. Oh boy, was I hot. And I put this big blonde wig on with these long bobby pins, you know, because I wanted it to look real in the morning too. And I wore these long eyelashes, and the other ladies, they used to wear one pair of false eyelashes. Well, I wanted to look really good, so I got myself four pairs of false eyelashes, and I put them on. I put them on good too, you know. I got a big tube of surgical glue. I put those suckers on because I wanted them to look real the next morning too. And I had the spandex black skirt because I knew it made me look good, you know. I looked slim, and black nylons and black to now real high heels, stiletto heels. And boy, whenever I would troll that bar, I knew everybody was looking at me and wanting to be just like me. And I was a people pleaser. And when I found out was that no matter who would come up and talk to me, I wanted you to love me. And I would tell you anything that you wanted to hear so that you would like me. I lie to everybody. And my big fear was that I'd walk into a room and all these different people that I had lied to about who I was and what I was and what I did, oh my goodness, they'd all be together. Oh my goodness, that was my big nightmare. But anyway, with this fabulous outfit that I used to go and drink in, I ended up drinking at a place called the Chit Chat, and it was in Bell Gardens, California, way far away from the Pacific Ocean, not near the water at all, okay? Way far away from the Pacific Ocean, and it was also known as the Hood, the Hood. And let me tell you something, I love the Chit Chat. The guys that came in there, they were hoodlums running from the cops. They had knives and guns, and the place was crazy. And then they also had musicians, and they'd get up and they'd sing country Western music. Oh, and I loved it. And I just loved that place. And one night I'm sitting there at the Chit Chat, staring at myself in the mirrors behind the bar. And as the night went on, I got skinnier, better looking, younger. Oh my God. By the time it was closing time, I was in love with myself, you know? And anyway, he hadn't walked in the door that night. So anyway, whenever they called last call, I I started ordering up a bunch of tequila kickers, you know. And I should have known that I had had enough whenever I started biting my hand and licking the wine. I should have known that I had had enough. And I left that bar that night just to go a couple blocks home because I like to live right by my watering hole, you know. And so I get in my car to go a couple blocks home, and I had my first blackout. And I don't remember it to this day. But let me tell you what happened, okay? You could do a couple blocks home. The next thing I know, the sun was coming up, and it was a little bit after 7 o'clock in the morning. And I was in Laguna Beach, driving right along the Pacific Ocean. And I, to this day, don't know how I got there. But I'm going to tell you something. Something happened in that car that night, because those black nylons, I had runs up and down those black nylons. One of my stiletto shoes had the heel broken off of it, and the other one was kind of wobbly and had gone through the floorboard of the car. And anyway, I'll tell you what, I needed a drink, and I looked around, I couldn't find any place to find a drink. And I thought, well, let me think about this. So I pulled over on the sand, drove right on the sand, and I laid down on the front seat. It was one of those, it wasn't a bucket seat, it was one of those other kind of seats. I laid down on that, and the sun was blazing in. It was the middle of July, and it was about 84 degrees already out there. And I thought, oh my goodness, and I put my arms over my eyes to block out that sun, you know. And the next thing I know, I had either passed out or fell asleep or something. But I had this nightmare, and it was my pre-Al-Anon grandmother, and she was shaking her fingers at me, giving me the Al-Anon salute. And she says, if you ever turn out like your mother, God is going to strike you deaf, blind or stupid. And oh my goodness, I came out of that that nightmare, and I was paranoid. I was crazy. And I got out of that car, and I was blind. I couldn't see a thing. I was totally blind. And I realized that, oh my goodness, my grandmother who raised me was a witch. And she's putting a casing thing on me, you know. And I was blind, and these people start yelling at me, and these beach bunnies are out there. I don't know what they're doing at that time in the morning, but they were, I guess I stepped on a few of them or something like that, and they were yelling at me. And I guess you know, I wasn't a good look for Laguna Beach in July. And and I kept yelling, I'm blind, I can't see. And they kept yelling at me. And finally I hear these footsteps going, running after me. So I started running across the sand. And all of a sudden my leaped off of my head. And luckily though, I had it secured by those long bobby pins, you know, so it just kind of bounced along beside me on the beach, you know. And this guy, he tackles me. Now, I know he was a football player because he tackled me, and he sat me down. He says these words to me, okay. He goes, oh, for gosh sakes, calm down. Same thing happened to my girlfriend. She's a cheerleader. I thought, oh my goodness, I finally made the team. I'm never going back to, you know, never going back to the chit chat again. I'm going to stay here with my new friends, and they're going to take me from bar to bar and say, this is Kelly and she's blind. Let's buy her a drink, you know. And that's not what happened. He sat me down and he took one thumb and he put it on my upper eyelid. And he took the other thumb and put it on my bottom eyelid. And he very slowly pulled my eyelids apart. And what had happened was that surgical glue had melted, and it plastered both of my eyes together. And that was the highlights of my drinking. And it went downhill from there. And so I'll tell you what, I ran and ran and ran all over Southern California. And every time I get fired from a job, I was real good at getting jobs, okay? I was real good at getting men, but I couldn't keep a job and I couldn't keep a man. I just couldn't. And I got fired. And every time I get fired, I go get another job. And the first thing I would do is go find the closest bar so I could make new friends, you know? So whenever I started on Monday, that I had new friends and I could come on my lunch hour and be with my friends. And one of the last jobs that I got was downtown Los Angeles. And I got a job and I was real excited about it. And I went to this bar to I parked my car in a parking lot, and I went to this bar and I sat there, and at 2 o'clock in the morning I came out of there and I couldn't find my car. To this day I have never found that car, and I ended up with no car down on the streets of Los Angeles, and there I was. And I lived like that for a long, long time. And I never did make it to that job. I couldn't remember where it was. And I never made it to that job at all. And I'm gonna fast forward to my last drink. My last drink was in Downey, California. Has anybody been to Downey, California? Yeah, okay. Now you know. That the Downey police do not know how to treat a lady in Downey. You know that. And I had nodded off in a parking lot. It was a country western parking lot. And the police woke me up at the early hour of 3:20 in the afternoon. And they took me to jail. And they told me, we don't want your kind in this town of Downey. We don't want Skid Row derelict women in our town. And what we're going to do is we're going to send you back downtown LA, and we're going to let you out in front of the mission. We don't ever want to see you back in here again. And anyway, they took me to this cell, and they slammed that door. Now, this was the day before Thanksgiving, 1982. I didn't know it was going to be my sobriety day. Okay. I had no idea it was going to be my sobriety date. And anyway, they threw me in that cell, and it was freezing in there. If anybody has been to jail right before Thanksgiving, you all know that it's freezing in those. They keep it that way, and I have no idea why in the world they keep it that way, but they do. And I'll tell you what, I was in that jail cell, and all of a sudden I looked up, and they had mistakenly put me in that jail cell with another lady, and she was crazy, and I was scared to death of her. She had these crazy eyes, and she had this red hair. It was all over the place. She had this big red bloated face, and I was scared to death of her. And I was yelling, please, please let me out of this jail cell. You've locked me up with a crazy lady. And all of a sudden I had this, what's called a moment of clarity. And I looked and I realized it was me looking at me in that aluminum door. And I hadn't seen myself for a long time. And I was horrified from that good looking girl in those spandex skirts and that blonde wig. I was horrified at what I'd become. And I fell on my knees and I asked God, just take me home. I can't make it on this earth. There's no way I can make it on this earth. Just take me home. T- take me home. And I don't know if that prayer ever got out of that jail cell, but the next thing that happened, the sheriff came in. He says, come on, you're getting out OR. I didn't know what OR was, and I almost stopped and tried to correct him. I'm sorry, sir, but you're supposed to give me a ride downtown LA and let me out in front of the mission. But something in my head said, shut up, shut up. So I shut up and I got out of there. And where I went to was a bar where I feel at home at. And I walked into the bar and they wouldn't serve me. And it was the day before Thanksgiving, and they said, we're getting dinner put together for a lot of our people that are coming to celebrate Thanksgiving, and we don't want you around. We don't want your kind in our bar. And the owner came out, and he looked at me, and he says, you know what? Would you like a bowl of soup? And I lied. I said, oh, I love a bowl of soup. It was lentil soup. A little bit of carrots floating around, you know, and I sat there and I was eating that soup and that. And he says, look, you can't stay here. He says, why don't you use that payphone on the wall back there and call somebody, come pick you up. Now I'm a street person. Okay. So anyway, I says, oh, sure. I'm going to go over there. And I told him, I says, well, I don't have any money. And he says, okay, well, here's some money. And I got a lot of pride, okay, but I picked up that money off the bar and I went over to that payphone. And here's how it was back in 1982. You could pick up a phone and call 411 directory, you know, and a live person will come on the phone and talk to you. So I thought, well, whenever I do that, I'll pretend it's a family member or friends or something, and then I'll go back and tell them, yeah, somebody's coming to pick me up. And they said, go ahead and serve me anything I want, and they'll pay you when they get here. Because we are sharp, I tell you, us street people, we are good, you know, we are really, really good. See, I don't have character defects. I have surveyed the streets of Los Angeles on. I had to learn those. Whenever I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out they were character defects. Who would have thought, you know, because I have survivor things. But anyway, I picked up that money and I went over to that pay phone. And here was this phone and there was this neon note after right next to the right hand side of it. It was neon, you know, so you could see it even in the dark. You could see this, and it said on there, if you feel that you have a problem with alcohol, call this number. Well, I picked up the phone, I called that number, and a lady by the name of Helen answered. Thank God. Oh, I got chills talking about it. Thank God that day she picked up the phone and she answered that phone the day before Thanksgiving, 1982, or you'd have a different speaker here tonight. I can guarantee you. And she asked me, she says, do you have a problem with alcohol? I said, yes. And I want to report this bar to you. I have a problem because they won't serve me. She says, well, good. She says, have you had a drink today? I says, no, I haven't. She says, well, you just may be able to make it to your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the people there are going to be so happy to see you. What I heard, you know, because we have selective hearing, what I heard was that there's people there that will be so happy to see me. Because on that day, the day before Thanksgiving, 1982, there was not a family member that would take a call from me or want me around. There was not a friend. I had no friends because all I did was use them and lie to them and use them and lie to them. There is no family members, no friends, no nothing that had anything to do with Kelly that day. And she told me, these people are going to be so happy to see me. I says, okay. She says, but you got to leave there right now. Oh, she was so wise. And that meeting started at 7 o'clock at night. It was a step study. And it was my first meeting of of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went over there and she said, you just wait and they'll all show up. And I did, I waited. You guys, I got to tell you, the first time I ever saw you guys, you beautiful people, you were the huggin'est and kissin'est people I'd ever seen in my life. And I said, I bet you they're all living in the same apartment building together too. And oh my goodness. And I went into the meeting and I sat right by the back door, you know, because I thought, golly, if they find out that I've had my children taken away from me, that I'm a horrible mother and my children have been taken away from me forever by the great state of California, that my husband had been killed in an automobile accident by a drunk driver, that I've been in jail 14 separate times for all over the place, and that I've never had anything that came together. I'm a bad person. I'm just a bad person. They find out how bad I am, they'll not want me here. And they're so nice to me. And I sat there by the back door and I thought, if any of them come up to me, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. And they left me alone, you know. And the president of Alcoholics Anonymous was sitting up in front. And I knew she was the president because she was running the whole thing. And at the meeting, at the end of the meeting, she says, and will our newcomer lead us in the Lord's Prayer of her choice? And I looked around to see what one of you newcomers looked like. And you were all looking at me. And I thought, how did they know? How did they know? And this guy, this old guy took a hand in my, took my hand. His name is Steve Cooper. Took my hand. And he says, that's you, honey. And I says, I don't know how to pray. I can't do it. I don't know how to pray. And Steve looked at me and he says, honey, you just say Our Father and see what happens. And so I did. I stood there and I went, Our Father. And you all chimed in. And I felt that electricity, you know, that electricity that we feel whenever we're, you know, our hands are in other people's hands and we're, and oh my goodness, the power and the glory and all, oh my goodness, that was wonderful. And then, I sobered up at a place called the Snake Pit and I went downhill from there. And I was told that everybody told me, well, Judge Emerson is going to make you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. He's going to sentence you to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where you're going to have to go. And I thought, well, nobody's going to tell me what to go do. I'll go anyway. And he said, well, you're going to have to sign a court slip. So I got, I have somebody some paper, and every time I went to a meeting, I wrote down the name of the meeting. I signed it myself, signed my own court cards, signed them. And the Snake Pit. Okay. So there, you know, I can sit in a meeting and I can be shut down. Like I can be on a Zoom meeting and take myself off a video and I'm out doing all kinds of stuff and I'm not listening at all. But you guys think I'm here, you know. But that's the way I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was shut down. But there was one guy that spoke louder than my head, and his name was Merle. And it was, you know, November, gratitude month in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had nothing to be grateful for, nothing. And I walked in the Snake Pit one day and Merle goes, Kelly girl. I thought, oh no, not Merle. He says, Kelly girl, what are you grateful for? I said, Merle, you know, I'm not grateful for anything. My children have been taken away from me. It's starting to get be the holidays and I'm not going to be able to stay sober. I go through malls looking for kids of my kids' age thinking, are those my children? Are those my babies? Merle, I can't stay sober. Well, Kelly, what are you grateful for? Merle, I'm not grateful for anything. My husband got killed in an automobile accident. He was killed by a drunk driver. And I'm a drunk and I can't stay sober. He says, well, first of all, the state of California didn't take your children away from you. Every time you drank and every time you were out there on the streets doing what you do, every time you're in your bars doing what you do, you're giving your children up. You gave your children up. So let's get that straight. And he says, then your husband and you drank together. You drank together. I said, yeah. I says, yeah. And he says, yeah. He says, so when he was picked up, did he have, you know, booze in the car? Yeah, he had cases and cases of empty Budweiser cans in the back of his car. Yeah. So, Kelly girl, what are you grateful for? I said, Merle, come on. He said, well, then let me ask you this, Kelly girl. Do you have syphilis? 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 He says, yeah, do you have syphilis? In those days, in 1982, they didn't have, you know, all the other stuff. It was syphilis was the big thing. I said, well, no, I don't have syphilis. He says, okay, take this piece of paper and write this down. I am grateful today I do not have syphilis. He says, now, he says, are you in a nut house or in a jail? I says, nope. He says, write that down. Today I'm grateful I'm not in jail or in a nut house. He says, now, have you murdered anybody today yet, Kelly? I said, Merle, no, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. He says, I want you to write that down. I'm grateful today I didn't murder anybody. He said, now that's your three gratitudes. Whenever you go into a meeting, and I know you don't listen to any a thing that's being said, when you go into a meeting, I want you to read those gratitudes and keep running those over in your head over and over and over. He says, because, Kelly girl, if you go back out that door again, okay, all three of those are your yes. All three of those could happen to you. He got my attention. And he says, let me tell you something. You might not think you're an alcoholic yet. And I thought, boy, how do you know? But sure, I sure am catching it in these rooms, let me tell you. That's why I don't listen. That's why I don't listen to anybody. I want to catch it, you know, I want to catch it. They say if you identify with it, you got it. You know, I thought, hey, I'm going to not listen. That way I won't catch it. So he says to me, he says, think of it this way. It's better to be in here by mistake than back out there by mistakes. And he had me again. He had me again. So anyway, I had to go get a job. I didn't have any skills. So they told me, go to school. I tell all my girls I sponsor. They don't have any skills, or they're working little chicken jobs like I would have to work. No, go to school. Get an education. So this guy, Steve, you know, the guy that I met at my first meeting, he used to go to the snake pit, and he had a Cadillac, and I knew the guys in there that had nice cars. I knew they were rich. Okay. So I went up to Steve and I said, Steve, what kind of work do you do? He said, well, I'm a real estate broker. I says, really? So I went and I found out that if I go and I apply myself and study and take the state test, guess what? They give me a real estate agent license. And I did. I went to work in that town of Downey. Let me tell you something. And when I was about a year sober, the Board of Realtors made me the chair lady of Make Downey Beautiful. Power to the powerless. And I'm going to tell you about this. There was this little girl in the snake pit one time, and she raises her hand and gave an improper announcement. She says, my two children and I are living in an abandoned car out in the parking lot. And at night, there's prostitution going on. There's drug deals going on. All the gangs are around and everything. And we are scared. Does anybody have a job or anybody have, you know, a room where we could stay in safety? And nobody would help them. And I got angry, and Merle started to leave, and I ran after Merle, and I pulled him back into the clubhouse, and I said, aren't you going to do something about this? And he says, oh, really? He says, well, let me tell you something, big shot real estate broker. We have a saying around here. I said, oh no, Merle, not another saying. Let's just help this girl. He said, Kelly, if you see something that needs to be done, do it yourself. And he left and I ran back after him and I grabbed a hold of him. In those days, he had two good legs. He could outrun me or try to. After that, he had gotten diabetes and they had to take off one of his legs. And when they took him to the hospital, they took off the wrong leg. But in those days, he could outrun me. And I said, you know, you got to do something. He says, look, call this number and tell Bud McDonald your sad little story. And there I go back to the bay, on the wall, the phone on the wall again. And I called up and this guy, I says, Bud, Merle wanted me to tell you that I'm a big shot real estate agent. He says, oh, you must be a newcomer too. How did he know? He says, well, we're having a meeting right now, the board of directors. Why don't you come over here? I'll buy you a gourmet lunch. And I went up there. And me and Marilyn, I don't know if Marilyn's on the meeting or not, but anyway, we were on that board of directors for 25 years and with the judge that sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous, Leon Emerson. And anyway, I'm so grateful because I was part of putting the first ever in the world women and children's recovery home together. It's called the Foley House and it's out in Whittier, California. Thank you. And oh my God, I got chills again. And hundreds of ladies with their children, they kept their children with them, got to come through that home and put their lives back together. And I've gotten letters from a lot of them since I've been on Zoom. They've heard me and they've gotten my address and they've sent me cards and everything. And I started thinking about, nobody in Downey wants to sponsor me, because all I was a taker, you know, just a taker, you know, taker, taker, taker. You come out from being shut down from all those years, you don't know how to socialize. You don't know how to walk up or sit down with a group and say anything. You can't say a word, you know, you just sit there like looking around and the women in Downey did not like me and nobody would sponsor me. And anyway, I went to Merle and I says, the women here in Downey, they don't like me. They won't sponsor me. Merle says, well, I got some news for you, Kelly. And I said, what? And he says, the men don't think too much of you either. I said, oh, great. Wonderful. So anyway, this one little lady, her name was Eileen. She came over to me. She says, Kelly, would you like to go to a meeting with me? If you'll go to this meeting with me, I will take you out for dessert afterwards. Take me to a meeting and go to dessert with me. Oh my goodness. I'm going to have a friend. I said, oh, I'd love to. Oh, I was higher than a kite. I tell you, I was so happy that somebody would go to a meeting with me. And she took me up to the women's club up on Paramount Boulevard. And we walked in and she sat me down in the front row, not the back row by the door, but the front row center, sat me down there. And then she got away from me real quick. And she didn't want to be seen with me because a lot of her friends were there. And I sat there and I, that night, could open up my heart and my mind because I heard the speaker talk. And I heard another speaker too speak, a lady, Luscious Lola before that. And Luscious Lola said something that gave me some hope. She said, we are not bad people trying to get good. We are sick people. And we're all getting well together. And boy, I'll tell you, that brought down my my blood pressure a lot, you know, and then I relaxed. But anyway, this night I'm sitting there and this guy got up and he said, I was in the Texas Insane Asylum and I escaped. And oh my goodness, he had my, attention because I knew I was going to end up in a nut house sober. I knew it. It's bizarre that if I thought something, I said it and did it. You know, I didn't know how to, you know, reserve my time. But anyway, I sat there and I opened up my mind. And then he said something. He says, I'm 25 years sober and I've got my 5 children back. Oh, he got his children back. Oh my goodness, I want to hear this. And he says, and my wife back. And I have so many friends. And I go to a meeting on Wednesday nights and there's only 1,400 of my friends in that meeting. And I thought, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. I opened up my heart and soul and I sat there and I listened to him and I wanted what he had, boy, I'll tell you. And he walked over to me after the meeting and he put out his hand and he says, I guess your sponsor hasn't taught you that you're supposed to thank the speaker after they finish speaking. And I just put my hand up and I went like this. And he says, yeah, every time you go to speak your meeting after this, you get up off your butt, off that chair, you walk up and you thank that speaker. I go, okay. And he says, and I understand nobody wants to sponsor you here in Downey. And I hid my head, you know. He says, let's see if you can do this. He says, tomorrow at 11:15, I want you to call this number. It's 624-9258. Make sure that you call it on time, not early, not late, at 11:15 on the, and I wanted what he had. And I called that number for 10 years, 10 years every day, Monday through Friday, because he was out speaking on the weekend. So and in those days, we didn't have cell phones. So anyway, I called him and he said, come on down the Midnight Mission. And I went down there and I sat in front of my soon-to-be sponsor's desk. He says, hey, kid, if he liked you, he called you kid. If he didn't like you, he called you something else. So anyway, he says, hey, kid. Oh, by the way, when I was new, I was bilingual. I spoke Bulgarian and English, okay? I've kind of cleaned up my act a little bit in 37 years. But anyway, I sat there and he says, kid, what's your biggest problem? I says, I think I'm going to end up in a crazy house, sober. I know I am. People have already told me in Downey that I need to be locked up, that I need a psychiatrist. They've already told me. And he says, well, and he thought about it. He says, I've got some good news for you. I said, oh, please, I need good news. He says, first of all, they don't put people in crazy houses for being crazy. I said, they don't? He says, no, they're only going to lock you up if you act crazy. So just don't act crazy and you'll never get locked up. Sometimes you can't believe the stuff that goes through my head, but I don't say it and I don't do it. I haven't been locked up yet in 37 years. Woo woo. He said, now, kid, what is the real problem? I says, I can't stay sober. Why not? Because the state of California took my children's back from me, and I don't know where in the world they are. I have no idea where in the world they are. No idea whatsoever. And I go through shopping malls, especially at the holidays, looking for them. And I can't stay sober. He says, thought a bit. He says, let me tell you what you're going to do. And he says, and I promise you, in God's time, everything will be okay. And I believed him. He said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to throw yourself into working with other people's children in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can help them so much better than their parents can. Whenever you come to the home group, which you now have a home group, it's called the Pacific Group, you're going to stand out by the front door or in front of the front door. And when people come up, you're going to ask them, hey, what's your name? How long you been sober? Do you have a sponsor? If they say they don't have a sponsor, the females, by the way, He says, tell him, I'll be your sponsor. Come on in. And he says, I want you to throw yourself to an intensity into working with newcomers. You guys, I still do that today. You can ask some of my people. Oh my goodness. Yes, yes. I work with intensity with the newcomers, and I love it. And so I did that. And then when I was about 10 years sober. Oh, by the way, this Foley House was the name of this house out in Whittier. I was asked to do service there. I was asked to be the first, put on the first event. And this beautiful couple, Lucretia and John, married couple, they were my first service sponsors. And they taught me how to put on an event. Now, I was the chairperson. They were the co-chairs, but they did everything. And they taught me, and they taught me, and they taught me, and they taught me. And I'm so grateful today for Lucretia and John for teaching me how to be of service. I still put on events. Anybody who comes around me, they know I've got an event coming or going, one or the other. Last event I put on was the Tampa Bay Fall Roundup out here, and I put it together on Zoom, and oh, we have so much fun on it. It was wonderful. But about 10 years sober, I realized that everybody had been, I'm going to start going into my end of my story now. I'm going to go start going back into the end of it. See, all my life, everything's been about stuff, money, cars, clothes, stuff. And I had starved the soul. I'd starved the soul. My soul had been starved. And I realized that my head would tell me that what I need is a good man. I need a good man. So I was 10 years sober, and I wasn't allowed to date yet. My sponsor wouldn't let me date. He used to tell me, he says, it's not for you, honey. It's for those poor guys that you're going to take them everything they've got and leave them. It's not for you. And so anyway, being in real estate, I knew how to market myself. So I put an ad in the LA Times, and it said, feisty redhead. I'm really a redhead. Feisty redhead looking for a 12-step relationship. I put that in the personal in the LA Times. And I got all kinds of letters. I mean, all kinds of letters, like you wouldn't believe. And I got this one letter, this guy says, I'm also in a 12-step program. Call me if you want. And he says, his name was Michael. And he put in a glamour shot of himself, a real glamour shot it wasn't common. He didn't have a copy of it or anything. It was a real glamour shot. And we met at the Bellflower Big Book, and I took him in there and started introducing him around. And all of a sudden, he was kind of gone. And I looked, and the dog on the roof grew past him in the middle of their group. And they're telling him, run, run, go in your car and get away from her. Run, run. Well, they didn't realize that he was a grateful member of Al-Anon. And Al-Anon, whenever you tell them, whatever you do, stay away from that woman, they fell in love. They fall in love. And he fell in love. And we went out for coffee afterwards. Well, Mike and I, that's the man on the bed. We've been married 27 years. Yay, Mikey. Hi, Mikey, say hi. Well, they can't see you, but anyway, you heard him. Anyway, people in my home group, they call him St. Mike for reasons unknown to me, I'll tell you. So anyway, Mike got transferred over to Florida. And to show that I would go to any lengths to stay married. Oh, by the way, we got married at the Pacific Group, and Clancy walked me down the aisle. And when we had 5 years on our Treasure Island Steppers meeting out here, Clancy came out and spoke at it. And he says, told everybody, he says, I walked that lady down the aisle 27 years ago, and I gave her away to Mike. And for 27 years, Mike's been trying to give her back to me. I mean, what a wonderful sense of humor, you know. And and he's all, Clancy's always going to be in my heart, as you know. You know, he's always going to be in my heart. But anyway, so I come out here and I get a broker's license out here, and you guys, I'm sponsoring people out here. But you guys, 2 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and I'm looking at the ceiling, wondering where those children are. Are they healthy? Are they loved? Did they get an education? Where are they? Oh my gosh. You know, it's been years. Everybody else seems to have their families back. I don't have mine back. And but I kept doing what I was told to do. And then I'm doing an open house in this big mansion, and my Cadillac is sitting up on this driveway, 890, a 42 degree trajectory. And it was August 2nd, 2002, and it was like 135 degrees of heat coming out of the designer driveway. And as I'm picking up my open house signs after the open house, I hear this big boom, and I look up and it's my car coming at me like a freight train. Something had happened with the brake signalers. And I tried to get out of the way and I didn't. It grabbed my left left leg, and it pulled me under the undercarriage, and it crushed my body. It crushed my left leg. It's put together by pins, by the way. I did a tib fib on the right, pulled up my body, pulled my rib cage out of my sternum, and crushed my lungs. And my whole life went right in front of me. And I thought, well, this is the last conscious thought I'm ever going to think in my life, because I knew it was going to run over my head. And I realized that everything that I had ever wanted an alcoholic in life, I got in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a fabulous life. The people I've sponsored were like my kids. Their children like my grandchildren. I had not missed a thing. I had not missed a thing, and I was ready to go. It ran over my head. It ran over my head this way. And my sponsor here in Florida, by that time, Clancy had told me get a sponsor that's heavy in service, because I needed to stay in service. And his name was Chuck Schultz, and Chuck was real tall. And anyway, I was in ICU and dying, and I had been I was clinically dead, and then they brought me back, and then I was laying there dying, and all of a sudden I see this tall guy come in. It's Chuck, and he got past everybody, and he had a book under his arm, and I says, what are you doing here? And he says, well, I came to see you. And I said, what do you got? And he says, well, something you've never read. I said, what? And he says, a 12 and 12. He says, I figured that while you're here in bed, that would work the sixth and seventh step. And I looked at him. I said, well, Chuck, I'm dying. He says, Kelly, it's never too late. And he came every day, and we worked the steps and all the crap and everything. We just cleared it up. So by the time they left me out of there six and a half weeks later and sent me home, I felt like I was a completely new person. I get home and the phone rings, and it's my landline. And it was a little lady from California. Her name is Sandra. And she asked me to come out to speak at Bud McDonald's 50th anniversary. I said, Sandy, I can't come out. I'm a gimp now. She said, you're a gimp. You used to sponsor me, and you told me that anything that you were ever asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous that you would do. So get yourself on your computer, get yourself an e-ticket, and tell them you're a gimp, and they'll put you at the front of the line. And she hangs up on me. I don't ever remember being that harsh with her, but I got on the computer and I got an e-ticket. And they said, go to your email. And I'm going, delete, 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 delete. And I stop. somebody had emailed me, and it was somebody who had my son's birth name. And I clicked on it. Here's what it said. Did I find you? Is this you? I emailed him right back, and I wanted him to know that I'm a good woman now. And I said, yes, you found me. And I'm almost 20 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he emails me right back. And he says, well, I want you to know I'm almost 6 months sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in those days, you know, we had big computers. We didn't have little laptops, but I said, I'm going to be off the computer for about a week. I said, I have to fly out to Los Angeles and speak at this old timer meeting. He goes, really, you're coming out to LA? And I said, yeah. He says, well, while you're in LA, after you get through speaking, why don't you get in your rent a car and come on down to the Newport Alano Club. I'll be waiting for you. Oh, you guys. Oh, I got chills telling you about this. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I'm driving down Newport Boulevard, right? And there's 32nd that crosses it. And I see this hyper kid walking on the corner. And I knew that was my boy. And I pulled over to the curb and I leaped out of the car as best I could, you know, with that walker. And I put my arms around him and I haven't let go. And we went and had soup. And he told me, he said, your daughter loathes me. You think that you're going to, I want to have a relationship with you. But if you think you're going to have a relationship with me to get to her, we'll end it right now. I said, Tim, I'll take what I can get. And so I'm on the 405 going back to LAX to come back to Florida, and my cell phone rings. It's a young lady. She says, is this Terry? And I said, yes, it is. And I knew I was in trouble because nobody calls me Terry, okay? I said, yes, it is. She said, well, this is your daughter, Tracy. And before you go back to wherever you came from, we need to talk. But I don't want you near my children or near my home. We'll meet at a restaurant. And we did. We met down in Long Beach. And for hours, we pulled down the walls between us. And I called Chuck up, and Chuck says, you go with your hand and your hat in your hand, and you realize that she's been damaged a lot. You got two ears and one mouth. You listen, you listen, you listen, you listen. And that's what I did. And after hours and hours, I was so emotional, and I got my car to go back, to come back home. And I thought, oh, I forgot to ask her if she wants my contact information. So I picked up the phone, and because of the digital, you know, phones, I had her phone number in my phone. So I pushed the button. She answered immediately. And I said, Tracy, I don't know if you want my contact information. She says, you know, I'm so glad you called. Would you like to meet your grandbabies before you go back home? Yeah. And I met them. I met Blake and I met Warren, and I left my heart in California. And anyway, my daughter told me, she says that she went to a church, Saddleback Church in Orange County, and there's a guy named Rich Warner or something like that. That's her purse. And they had this recovery, and she suffers from anorexia. It's an eating disorder. And she said that she was, you know, that all her life, everybody told her, you're just like your mother. You're just like your mother. She couldn't nurture herself. And so they had taken her to this recovery program that was in the church. They set her up in the front row. And this couple came out, and they were doing a weekend on forgiveness. And the lady says, does somebody wanna volunteer so we can show you how this is done? And her friends pushed her up on stage, and she sat down. And this lady looked at her and says, do you have a resentment against somebody? She says, yes, my birth mother. She's a monster. She ought to be locked up somewhere and never be allowed on this earth again. And a lady looked at her. She says, you never have to have anything to do with your birth mother. You never have to have nothing to do with her again as long as you live. This is about you and getting you ever over it. And are you willing to do that? And the lady said, and my daughter said, yes, I am. I've got to save my life. She says, okay, here's how we do it. What's your birth mother's name? She said, Teresa Kelly. And the lady stopped and looked at her and said, are you talking about Teresa Kelly from Downey, California? And she, my daughter said, I started crying. I said, yes. And the lady says, oh, Tracy, and your mother's been looking for you for a long time. You've got to get in touch with your mother. She's been looking for you for a long time. Loved ones, who that was, that couple up on stage taking people through that forgiveness was Lucretia and John, my service sponsors. Service had come around and put their arms around me. Service did 360 degrees. I'm going to close now. So my daughter looks at me and she says, I've got to ask you for this. I thought, oh, brother, if it's $1 million home, I'm going to have to go, sell a few more houses. She looked at me. She says, will you forgive me? I said, forgive you. She says, please. She says, please forgive me. I've been calling every FBI, every police, trying to have you locked up for years. Please, will you forgive me? I put my arms around my daughter. I put my hand right on the back of her beautiful, beautiful blonde head. And I held her to me real gently. And I told her, I said, Tracy, I forgive you, baby. I forgive you. And then I says, you know what? I forgive everybody. I forgive everybody lives far away, everybody near to me. I forgive everybody in my past that has messed over me. I forgive anybody that wants to mess over me in the future. You're already forgiven. I forgive. And I threw myself into that 11th step. And I started feeding the soul. And I want to tell you what my life is like today. My husband and I, we've been married 27 years. I've been on my job as a real estate broker 37 years. I have my family back. Just like that man got up and said that he had had, he gave me everything so that I could do the same. And now I can get up in front of you and say, you know what? I've been on my job for 37 years, been married 27, have all my family back. My whole family's come back to me. And let me tell you the best thing about it all, okay? My grandchildren adore me. They call me Grandma ATM. Please don't judge me, okay? I do what I gotta do. And it's because of people like you and rooms like this. Tonight, we get to come together and thank God. Thank God for the gifts that are priceless that have been given to us. Thank you for letting me share.
Oh, Kelly, thank you so much for your powerful message. That's so incredible.
Namatas.
Tell everyone to unmute themselves if they'd like to thank the speaker briefly.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly, so much.
Thank you, Kelly.
That was amazing.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
So good.
Beautiful story.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you.
That was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Amy. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
Thank you, Andrea. Oh, and then there's some kind of an ask it basket. Is that what's going to happen now? I can't wait.
Yes, ma'am. So I will actually take the meeting back. Going to mute everybody once more. And yes, thank you. A reminder, please, if you can think of some questions you'd like Kelly to answer, send those to Larry at questions at this time. And we're going to give Kelly a brief break while we do some more housekeeping. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. And briefly, does anybody have any announcements at this time? You can raise your virtual hand or wave at the screen. I am not seeing anybody with announcements. Okie dokie. So, moving on to simple actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out at a meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here in the Zoom room after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you don't have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, feel free to send us an email at info@simpleactions.net. Now is the question and answer portion of our meeting. So I am going to turn the meeting over to Larry.
Thank you, BJ. Thank you, Kelly. Wow, that was amazing. Getting very emotional. So usually I'm the person that's behind the scenes compiling the questions tonight, because David's being a good husband and taking his wife to dinner. I'm going to fill in for him, hopefully. So we have a bunch of questions lined up. Please, if you have some more questions, please send them my way. So our first question is, has God relieved you of the people pleasing? Would you be willing to give an example of how that has changed for you? Kelly? Uh-oh. Did we lose Kelly?
I am not.
I think we did. Let's give it a second. This gives us plenty of time to get some questions together. We'll give it a second. Let Kelly rejoin. While I get some of these other questions lined up. And if not, we can do a roundtable and pick people to answer some of these questions. Though some of them are Kelly specific, so that might be a little weird for you trying to answer questions that are specifically. There she is. Hey, Kelly, we got you back. I'm going to co-host you again. Or BJ, can you co-host Kelly? There you go. Awesome. Kelly is back. Perfect timing. Kelly, let's see. We have co-hosted you, have we? There we go. We have some questions lined up for you. So thanks for jumping back on. All right. So the first question is, has God relieved you of people pleasing? Would you be willing to give an example of how that's changed for you?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I'm a liar. Okay. And anytime I meet somebody, I want you to like me. I'll sell my soul if you like me or love me. Okay. And I can walk into a room and anybody, and they go, Kelly's here. Hi, Kelly. And I feel normal. But I walk into a room and you go, oh, hi, Kel. I feel rejected. I don't know what that's all about. But I can tell you one thing about people pleasing is that you have to lie to everybody, because you have to be what they want you to be. So so the way that I was taught how to do this was, first I had to know who I was, and how I found out who I was by working with a sponsor and doing the steps. And then whenever I would be looking at somebody and being who I thought they wanted me to be, I would step back, take a deep breath and say, you know, let me reframe that for you. And then I would tell the truth. Let me tell you something. Whenever you lie to somebody, there's nowhere else to go with your friendship. You can't go anywhere else with your friendship. You're at a dead stop. It's just like if I lie to my husband, there's nowhere else for me to go. But if I step back and I say, hey, Mike, can I reframe that for you? And he looks at me and says, yeah, I wish you would. And I go, okay, let me reframe this. You know, it's like whenever I came to Florida from California, we moved back to California with my grandchildren. And then I came back to renew my real estate teaching credential. And while I was here, I bought a house. And I didn't tell them. I lied by omission, lie from omission. And I went home and I didn't tell them, you know, and I bought it. And then I thought, how am I going to tell him that we're going to have to pack up the house here and sell it and move back to Florida, because I've had it with California. I have to go back to Florida. Yeah. So then I had to sit him down and said, Mike, he asked me how I enjoyed my trip to Florida. And I said, fine. And there was no place to go from there. No place to go. There was nothing to talk about. Fine. And I said, can I reframe this for you? He says, yeah, I wish you would. And I said, well, I was out there. I bought a house. Hope you like it. And anyway, we sold the other house, moved out here, and we came here on New Year's Eve Day. Wasn't that right, Mike? Yeah. And we had no electricity. So by the time we got here, it was real dark, so he couldn't see the inside. And we had no furniture. We had to sleep on the floor. And next morning we got up and he went looking around. And he looked and he says, you know, the more I see this home, the more I love it. And we've lived here now for 11 years. So reframe. It's discipline, you guys. Discipline. And God has given me the tools in my tool bag to make sure that on my character defects that come up every once in a while, that I have the discipline and the tools in order to handle it. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Kelly. Our next question, you shared a few of your spiritual experiences with us tonight. Yeah, I think I had a spiritual experience hearing them. Would you be willing to tell us any other significant spiritual experiences you've had over the years?
Oh, sure. I'll tell you this one. Last year, I had a severe stroke. In the middle of the night, I went paralyzed on my right-hand side. And, you know, the husband, he doesn't wake up, you know. I fall out of bed and I'm rolling, trying to roll, trying to do everything. I can't do anything. I'm paralyzed. I can't talk. I can't talk at all, right? And finally, I got his attention and he drove me to the hospital. And they determined I had a stroke. I couldn't talk. And I was booked to talk at the Florida State Convention. I was booked to talk all over the place, and I couldn't say a word, not one word. And I lay there in that bed down at St. Anthony's Hospital, not able to talk. And I'm laying there, and the nurses would come in every day, and they'd look at my, they'd say, what is your name? And they'd say, look at your the band on your wrist. And I'd look at it, and they'd say, there's your name. Say your name. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And then this speech therapist came in, and she says, what I want you to do every morning, I want your husband to bring you a book. And every morning, whenever you wake up, I want you to open up that book and try to say those words, try to read. And he brought me the book, Varieties of Religious Experiences. That's what he brought me. And so anyway, all of a sudden one morning, about three mornings later, I wake up and I go, my name's Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh my goodness, the nurses start running in. They go, are you okay? Are you okay? I said, yeah, I think I'm going to be okay now. I think I'm going to be okay. And anyway, they sent me home, and this beautiful lady, Dr. Carol, and I don't know if she's on here tonight or not, but Dr. Carol came and twice a week taught me how to talk again, taught me how to talk again. And every morning I was to, whenever I sat down to my husband for breakfast, I was to walk, I was to read out of a book. And so I thought, well, I'm going to read him on the variety of religious experiences. I'll read, you know, Al-Anon needs to hear this. Well, there was a part in that book, and all of a sudden I read it. And it was a key to everything that happened to Bill whenever he was in Towns Hospital, and everything that's happened to a lot of people after that. That is a spiritual experience. And what it was, that if anybody ever comes to me and tells me, I have had this spiritual experience, whatever it is, you take it seriously. You take it seriously. And you tell them, thank goodness you've had that beautiful experience. Thank goodness, and what a beautiful experience you've had. And that's exactly what Silky did whenever he went in to see Bill, whenever he was in the hospital, remember? And Bill says, oh, I've had this white light experience, right? Uh-huh. And Silky looked at him and he says, look, because he had just read that book, just read that by William James. I've got it right up there in the top. Right up there. There's my other books and stuff up there. And he looked at Bill, and he had read that. And he looked at him. He says, Bill, I don't know what's happened, but whatever you thought, you better hang on to it. Because you know what? You're doing better now than you've ever done before. And that's the experience that I've felt. And that's the experience that I share with the people I sponsor, or anybody that comes up to me and says, I've had this spiritual experience. Thanks for asking me.
Thanks, Kelly. You mentioned your husband, and I know you said that both of you are in 12-step programs. Can you share some of your experience with having a healthy relationship when both people are in 12-step programs or in a program of recovery?
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Here. I want you to meet my husband. Mike?
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Mike.
How y'all doing tonight? Good to see y'all.
Anyway, okay, a healthy relationship. Mike went to a relationship counselor. Her name's Pat Allen. Pat Allen has her PhD in relationships. And she, at that time, she had 42 years on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so finally, he asked me, he says, Pat, I want you to come and see what we do. All right, I'll go, you know. So I went. And at the time, I was thinking about getting rid of him, you know. She was down in Newport Beach, and she had this room, and it was crowded with people. And she had this one little bar stool in the middle. And I'm very comfortable on bar stools, you know. And she, whenever I, she asked me, first of all, the first person, she says, come on up and take a seat. And I said, where, on a bar stool? She says, yeah, you know how to sit on a bar stool. I said, yeah, I do. And I got up there and she says, okay. So I understand that you want to get rid of your husband. I said, yeah, I sure do. She said, okay, well, tell me what's good about him. I said, what's good about him? She says, yeah, what's good about him? I says, okay, well, he pays the mortgage. He does landscaping out in our home. He goes to work every day. He's a hard worker. He's a good cook. And he does a lot of things around the house. And she says, okay. And what don't you like about him? I said, let me tell you. I can't wait to get rid of him. He can't dance. And I'm a dancing fool. Everybody knows me. I'm a dancing fool. And this guy, he's just like a piece of cement out there. I can't stand it. I gotta get rid of him. She says, okay, so let's see now. He's about 51 to 95% perfect for you, right? I said, yeah. And she says, well, are you a businesswoman? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you're a real estate broker. Are you a businesswoman? I said, well, yeah, I'm a businesswoman. Okay, then, wouldn't it be stupid for you to give up 95% for something that's perfect for you and trade it for 5% of something that you want? And she had me. And I thought, yeah, why should I get rid of him? Oh, my God, why should I get rid of him? And so that kind of told me, you know, where my head was at, that I got the best thing going for me right now. So then I thought, well, she's not my sponsor. So I went down to Clancy, had a whole list. He says, okay, yeah, read them out to me. Yeah, what's that son of a bitch doing to you? Blah, 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 blah. This is what he's doing. Blah, blah, blah. Right ahead. Anything else? Put more on there. Yeah. I had this list, you know, at the top of the list it said Mike, you know. Finally, Clancy says, come on, anything else? I said, no, I think that's it. Mm-hmm. He says, okay, read them over to me. I did. He says, okay, now what I want you to do is I want you to take Mike's name. It's on top of that list, and I want you to cross it off. And on top of that list, I want you to put Kelly on top of that list. Because if you spot it, you got it. And I want you to work on every one of those things on yourself and keep your eyes off of him. He has a sponsor. Her name is Benoit Shaw. He has a sponsor. You got a sponsor. You keep your eyes on yourself and you work on all those on yourself. Let me tell you what happened, okay? All of a sudden, it was a miracle. Mike turned out wonderful. Oh, it was magic. Oh, every day he got better and better and better. Oh, I tell you, if you ever want to get your husband or wife or something a lot better than they are, try that. It works 100% of the time. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kelly. Can you tell us a little bit about what your daily, what steps 10 and 11 look like for you today?
10th and 11? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do 10th and 11 every day. I live 10 and 11 every day. I live those. And you know what? I don't have to pray in the morning. I pray all day long. Nobody says, oh, gee, you wake up in the morning, you're 20 minutes of, you know, meditation, 10 minutes of prayer. No. You know, I meditate anytime I want. I pray all through the day. And the one thing that Sandy Beach told me this before, whenever he used to come and speak at our Treasure Island Steppers all the time. And he told me, he says, Kelly, he says, I'm going to give you a gift. I says, okay. He says, Kelly, he says, what I want you to do, he says, I want you to hang around with the winners in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I says, really? I thought I was. He says, no, I really do. I want you to run around. I want you to hang around with the winners in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, who are the winners? And he says, the winners in Alcoholics Anonymous are the least disturbed people in a meeting. He says, what I want you to do is be the least disturbed person in that meeting. What I want you to do is if in your gut or anything, all of a sudden you feel uneasy, I want you to look at it and figure, well, what have I done? And immediately make amends. And if they're a jerk, forgive them. Forgive them. And stay undisturbed. And today, that's what I really work on steps 10 and 11, is if I own an amends, I make it immediately. I make it immediately. And I make it heartfelt. And if the person's the jerk, I forgive them. Because you know what? There's a whole world out there, and not everybody has a program. Not everybody has a program. I forgive them. My sponsor today tells me to carry around little forgiveness slips with me. And what I do each day, if I have to go somewhere, I give up a couple of them before I even leave the house. Anybody that cuts me off, they've already gotten a forgiveness slip. I hand these out, and I've got a whole stack of them. And if I need more, I can bring more. I have a right here. So I give them out, forgiveness slips. Thanks.
Kelly, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been so amazing. We had a bunch of questions to go, but sorry if I couldn't get to everybody's questions. I'm going to pass it back over to BJ so we can wrap the meeting up. But thanks again for all your time.
Do you want me to put my number in something so that if anybody wants to call me later and ask me something, they can?
You definitely can if you want. You have the ability to chat to everybody because you're a co-host.
Okay. Cool. All right. All right, I will put my phone number in there for everybody.
Thank you. That's awesome. Great. Okay. That added bonus. All right. So in closing, I'd like to thank you again, Kelly, for just a wonderful evening. That was a super fast hour and a half. And thanks to everybody who participated, Larry. And we're going to do the Lord's Prayer, and afterwards I will allow everybody to unmute again to thank our speaker. And I'm going to ask for a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Actually, Amy, could I get you?
I'll do it.